Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here with a wonderful author of a book that is a must get. In fact, get two of them. Keep one for yourself and get one for your best friend who is into history, because this is a great one. Texas Titans, George H.W. Bush and James A. Baker III, A Friendship Forged in Power. Do I have that right, Charles?
Yes, sir, you do.
And Charles Denyer, the author of that wonderful book, is here with us. Absolutely thrilled to have him. We're coming up on the, we're here at the anniversary, 2 year anniversary of President Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, and who better to talk to than Charles Denyer? Charles, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Well, listen, this is an amazing book that you've put together, and I imagine a lot went into it. But the first thing I thought of when I heard about Texas Titans is that iconic camping trip. And I don't know if you referenced it in the book, but Michael Dukakis was up by 18 points. The Democratic convention was going on, and they flipped to, and it wasn't a 24-hour news cycle quite yet, but the news channels flipped to the video footage that was given to them by, I guess, who knows, Lee Atwater or somebody, gave him the footage of George Herbert Walker Bush and James Baker sitting around a campfire camping. And everyone, I remember Republicans saying, what are they doing? And they just took it very slow, and they ended up blowing out Michael Dukakis. And that moment, I guess, said a lot about that friendship. You know, who would you be with during that time? Why not James Baker?
I couldn't agree more. And James Baker, the master strategist, he co-chaired or ran five successive presidential campaigns from 1976 to 1992. If anybody was ready for running and gunning in 88, it was going to be Baker, and he was going to take Dukakis down.
Yeah, I mean, without question. Where did the two men meet, Bush and Baker? Where did the two of them come together?
They met on the tennis courts of the Houston Country Club. They were paired together as double partners. They did not know each other. They ended up winning back-to-back doubles championships at the Houston Country Club. And that same analogy where they're better together than they are apart spilled over into the political arena for the next three decades.
Now, was it a match made in heaven from the start? Was it, so to speak, love at first sight? Or did it take a little while before they clicked?
I think they clicked pretty quick. Their families became fast friends. They ran the same social circles in Houston. They were part of the Houston Country Club. Baker began by being Bush's counsel for his growing company. So there was a lot of trust that was embedded early on. So when they turned to the political arena, George Bush turned to his best friend, who he ultimately trusted more than anybody.
Sometimes these partnerships match up perfectly because one individual has traits that the other one doesn't have. What does James Baker have that George Herbert Walker Bush didn't?
James Baker was the master strategist, the campaign gunslinger. He was the man who understood the nuts and bolts of what it took to get a campaign going, to get his candidate out in front. You have to remember, George Bush took down Governor Reagan in the Iowa caucuses in 1980, completely surprised the governor.
Wow.
And that's a testament to, obviously, Bush's hard work, crisscrossing all the counties in Iowa, but also Baker's hard work also.
Who brought in Lee Atwater? And again, if there was a political if there was a political Hall of Fame, the late, great Lee Atwater would have to get a whole wing dedicated to him. Who brought him in?
Yes, one of the most feared strategists of all time. If Lee was on the other side, your opponent was shaking. Yeah. That was an effort really by Baker and at that time Vice President George Bush's Chief of Staff Craig Fuller to bring in somebody to help with the Republican base. You have to remember Bush was looked upon as a moderate, and Atwater was going to change that and change that very quickly.
Yeah, an amazing amount of talent that we have here. And again, Baker, You know, both James and Howard were synonymous with the Reagan White House as well, and the relationship there, you know, is legendary as well. Did Baker have much to do, and pardon my ignorance on this, but did James Baker have much to do with George Herbert Walker Bush securing the vice presidential nod?
He had everything to do with that. In fact, the one phone call that George Bush took, 11:30 at night at a Detroit hotel during the Republican convention, was one of Reagan's aides who said, "May I speak with Ambassador Bush?" And Bush got on the phone. The other gentleman handed the phone to Reagan, said, "I'd like to join me on that ticket." After that, there became the Bush dynasty, if you think about it, that one phone call. Baker told Bush, "Hey, you've got to drop out of the Republican primary in 1980. Reagan's got this locked up. You're hurting your chances as vice president." Bush didn't want to hear it, but he knew Baker made the right call. That one decision created the Bush dynasty.
Texas Titans is the name of the book. It is a must-get, everyone. And if you're just joining us, or if you're just turning on your radio a little late, Frank McKay here. Texas Titans, George H.W. Bush and James A. Baker III, a friendship forged in power. Charles Denyer is the author of this great book. It is a must-get. Frank McKay here with Charles. The idea that James Baker and Bush were this close, and I've always heard that they were, I mean, the best of friends, and all the way to the very end. How close were they? I mean, was it best friends? Was it one of his best friends? Was it his absolute 100% closest ally?
Absolute 100% closest ally, personally and politically. No doubt about it. The man that he turned to time and time again was James A. Baker. When he was in deep trouble against Bill Clinton and Ross Perot in 92, he asked Baker to resign as Secretary of State to come back and run the campaign. Baker dutifully did. When his very last day on earth, right before he passed, Baker went to go see him. Baker used to call him Jefe. And he said, "Bake, where are we going today?" And Baker said to Bush, "Jefe, you're going to heaven." He said, "Good, that's where I want to go." And he passed later on that evening. There wasn't a closer person, obviously outside of his wife, than I would say Jim Baker, at least from a friend perspective.
Amazing. During the Gulf War, and again, let's, you know, we'll set the stage. The United States hadn't seen war or conflict like anything this size or what we were expecting since Vietnam. And at the time of Vietnam, nobody would call it a war. It would be called a conflict. What George Herbert Walker Bush did in that powder keg of an area and in the Middle East, what he did, the coalition that he put together, was just unbelievable. And in my mind, just absolute greatness. I couldn't imagine anyone doing better than that. Of course, he couldn't account for Ross Perot, a fellow Republican Texan, coming in and sucking 19% of the vote from him, and also an economy that wasn't his fault, that tanked, kept him from being reelected. How much did it bother Bush and Baker, the loss? Did they get over it quickly? It seemed like Bush was so gracious to the Clintons when they came in. Was it a bitter pill for him to swallow, or was he kind of ready to move on?
No, it was devastating. But I will make one comment about the Gulf War. You have to remember, too, that was the fourth largest army in the world, Iraq.
Yeah.
They had a massive army. This was not something that we thought we would just walk over. There were a lot of trepidations about that. So that was a very courageous move that Bush made. As far as the 1992 election, Ross Perot was in it for one reason only. He had an animosity towards George Bush. President Reagan told Bush to call Ross Perot when Bush was vice president and say, "Hey, pal, there's no more MIAs in Vietnam. We're not going back into Vietnam. The case is closed." He never forgot that, and he was gunning for Bush the moment he knew Bush was vulnerable. That's why he entered the race. He did become true friends with Bill Clinton years later. They did put partisan politics aside, and Bush has always said, "I'm really the dad that Bill Clinton never had." They had a very meaningful real relationship. But that was tough. That was the first election of the 24/7 news cycle, cable news. That was all the first generational election. Bill Clinton was as old as his son, George W. Bush. So a complete unbelievable set of events that unfolded in 1992 that made it such a unique election.
Texas Titans, George H.W. Bush and James A. Baker III, a friendship forged in power, is a must get. Everyone, you must read this book. You must buy two of them. Charles Denyer, the author, is here with me, Frank McKay. Thrilled to have Charles on the anniversary, the two-year anniversary of the loss of a president and the father of a president, a vice president for 8 years under a very successful transitional, transformative presidency in Ronald Reagan. And what a life and career George Herbert Walker Bush lived. And we celebrate that today with Charles Denyer, the author of Texas Titans. Great, great read, everyone. Frank McKay here again with Charles. Going back to the Gulf War, and I don't think enough could be said because of the, and I hate to say this about war, but the ease that that the American army destroyed, as you put it, the fourth largest army in the world, the ease, somehow we take that for granted. But I remember after 24 hours, I think it was Bernard Shaw on CNN, and really that war put CNN on the map. I mean, let's face it. I mean, CNN was, the election before it, yes, but that war, everyone was glued to that. And I think that created cable news TV as we know it now, and everyone came after that. But I remember 24 hours after the start of the war in the Gulf, Bernard Shaw had, and that was he was one of the anchors on CNN, he had the editor of U.S. News and World Report on. He was the military editor, and he says, "Well, what are you thinking?" He says, "Well, we're 24 hours after the war that George Bush has put this coalition that you can't believe together, and already we could say that the Iraqi Air Force is destroyed 24 hours after it." And he said, "The first thing I could think of, the only thing I could think of, is what must Russia be thinking? All of these weapons, the Star Wars and everything that Ronald Reagan was talking about and Bush as his vice president, it works. They work, and they're using it with great ease and wow." But at that moment in time, you would have said, you would have put him on Rushmore. You would have put George Herbert Walker Bush on Rushmore. It's amazing that because he got through it so quickly, and again, Perot, doing what he did, he is an underrated president, and he's someone that I don't think is going to get his just due until history kind of plays it out a bit. Do you agree on that?
I do. James A. Baker called him the best one-term president ever and one of the best presidents of all time. And I completely agree. Look, if Lee Atwater was around, if Roger Ailes was around, if John Sununu was around, those three, but especially Atwater, they would have hit Clinton with a 2x4 right between the head. There wouldn't have been a governor, a president, Bill Clinton. He would have been a small paragraph in the pages of the history books like Dukakis. Three key figures were gone from that 1992 election campaign. Add to the fact that Perot took 90% of the vote, a vast majority or significant majority of Republicans, Bill Clinton's the luckiest political rascal around.
Without question. By the way, I've got to meet both President Bush, both President Bushes, and President Clinton numerous times, and Bill Clinton had said to me personally, he said, "One of my best friends in the world is George Herbert Walker Bush." And he said, "What a man! What a great man!" They really became close, those two.
Oh, they did. They did. In fact, Gene Becker, who I know quite well, President Bush's chief of staff, while he was ex-president for, I guess, a quarter century, said they were very, very close. I said, "How close?" And she crossed her finger. She said, "That close." It was a real friendship. It really was. And I think to a certain degree, Bill Clinton was looking for a father, and George Bush was the father he never had.
Yeah, they had a unique experience that they that they shared that only 45 people in the world or the country ever experienced, and those two bonded together over a very unusual circumstances, but just amazing. You mentioned the death of the late great Lee Atwater, who was just absolutely brilliant, as James Baker is brilliant. But Lee Atwater, we lost at a very early age of brain cancer, and that was a huge loss. And I agree with you. If he didn't die, I think he would have made mincemeat out of Governor Clinton then at the time, and he would have tore him to shreds like he tore Dukakis to shreds, and he just absolutely destroyed him, and along with Baker and the two of them together. But it seemed like to me as an outsider, and I was a young man when this was going on, but I was glued to the situation. It seemed to me like the Bush campaign was in a complete disarray. The re-election campaign when Atwater died. What can you share with us about what happened after Atwater died?
So a couple of things. Too many cooks in the kitchen, as Baker likes to say. Samuel Skinner was in over his head as chief of staff. They didn't really have a core focus on the campaign. They felt the international achievements, particularly the Gulf War, were so astounding that they didn't really give much attention to the campaign. This is a man in January of 1991 has a 90% approval rating.
Wow.
Stratospheric. The notion that he would lose election that following year in December was almost just improbable. But again, Clinton just got extremely lucky. The only thing that's constant in Washington is change. And after 12 years of Republican rule, he made the case that, hey, it's time for a change. And look, the economy was actually recovering at that time. Samuel Skinner made a big error by telling Bush, you need to go ahead and just tell people the economy's bad but getting better. So they were missing key operatives. They didn't have the right people. And I think really ironically, the one person that had that 88 tone of being aggressive and telling Bush to get more people on board back from the old campaign was Dan Quayle. Quayle was one pushing for Atwater type tactics, saying, look, we're in trouble here. This governor is making some serious noise out here. And it was a little too late when Baker came over from State Department with 10, 12 weeks left in the campaign. It was a sinking ship, and wasn't much you could do by then.
Texas Titans, everyone, is a must read, a complete and an absolute read. You must buy this book, George H.W. Bush and James A. Baker III, A Friendship Forged in Power. Charles Denyer is the author, and he is our very special guest, Frank McKay, here with Charles Denyer. And, I'd be remiss not to jump back to the Dukakis election, and we got Dukakis in a sense. We, the American people and the Democrats got Dukakis basically because of the scandal with Gary Hart and Gary Hart on the monkey business, the boat named Monkey Business, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Who was that? That was a Rice. Was it Donna Rice?
Donna Rice.
Donna Rice. And then we lost Gary Hart. The American people lost him as a candidate. What was the reaction of Baker, Bush, Atwater when they got to go against Dukakis, who didn't, let's face it, he didn't look like a Kennedy from the same state, but he didn't look anything like a Kennedy, and he didn't have the charisma that Gary Hart would. I would think, from an outsider standpoint, that they were thrilled to have Dukakis over Hart.
Oh, sure. Honestly, at that point, it really didn't matter. The economy was strong. The Reagan legacy was intact. Bush was a very, very strong candidate. He looked the part of a president, 6'2½". He spoke well. He was highly engaging and personable. I don't really care who they were going to run against Bush. He simply wasn't going to lose. The fact that Dukakis led with his chin, as Baker likes to say, with far left policies, didn't look presidential, was 5'8", had a very stiff demeanor about him. He ended up getting clobbered. 411 electoral votes, I believe, was the number. It was an absolute rout and a landslide of epic proportions, the third in a row for the Republicans, 80, 84, and 88. Putting Benson on the ticket, it didn't matter. It really didn't matter who they're going to run against. They had such a strong case for electing President Bush. Again, by the way, the first vice president elected president since Martin Van Buren, 1836.
Amazing. People forget that. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a shoo-in when he got there, in spite of all of that. You know, the economy, again, being there, I do think they got a bit of a break when Gary Hart imploded and imploded in such a majestic way. And I'm going to let everybody know once again, Texas Titans is the book you got to get. Charles Denyer is the author of that. And Charles, do we have you for another quick segment?
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, Charles Denyer once again is here, and I want to welcome everyone back. If you stepped away to Breaking It Down, Frank McKay here, welcoming back Charles Denyer. He's the author of Texas Titans, George H.W. Bush and James A. Baker III, A Friendship Forged in Power, is an absolute must to buy. And as we sit here on this day, 2 years after losing George Herbert Walker Bush, the former president and the father of a president, two-term president, and in the White House as vice president for 8 years under Reagan, what a career he had! Head of the CIA, ambassador to China. All right, I think right. If I have that right, he'll correct me, Charles. But yep. What an unbelievable career George Herbert Walker Bush did. And as we welcome everyone back, let me ask you this about Bush. And somehow or another, there was he was labeled a wimp, and maybe because his voice was a little high or whatever. I mean, this is a war hero. This is a guy who was shot down. There's nothing. I mean, you couldn't find a more John Wayne type character and a more humble guy about it. If you search the world, and somehow or another, people were calling him a wimp. And if I understand correctly, Lee Atwater and James Baker, they slowed down his speech. They said, okay, look, you're talking a little fast. Let's slow it down. Let's slow it down a little. And it kind of deepened up his voice. Can you shed any light on that?
Sure. In fact, the idea that he was a wimp was called the wimp factor, and that was a notion fixated on by a handful, two or three Newsweek reporters in 1987, 1988, who coined that phrase, who probably never served a day in their life in the military
right.
anyways.
Right.
So it was an absolute joke to call this man a wimp, youngest naval aviator shot down in World War II. But they did. I think they hardened him a little. They did have him slow his speeches down. They tried to make him a little more rugged. He spent more events, doing more events out in Texas. At times you'd find him with the cowboy hat on and eating pork rinds. They tried to maybe soften up that East Coast, gentry, somewhat of a personality. You know, there's an old saying here in Texas, and it's a kind of a big discussion, the Texanhood of George H.W. Bush. What does that really mean? And, you know, you can almost write a book about that as far as, you know, how people feel about that. But he truly was a Texan. Being a Texan is not a birthright. It's an attitude. And Bush had that attitude of a Texan.
George Herbert Walker Bush, to me, was also a very independent thinker, as Barbara Bush was, and they were not cookie cutter Republicans. They had differences of opinions with hardline Republicans, but they, you know, in the core values, they certainly were fiscal responsibility and so forth. And you know, you're going to have to shed light on this for me, because I was a 12-year-old looking at a black and white TV set in my room and watching as they announced that Governor Reagan has made his announcement that he's selecting George Herbert Walker Bush as his running mate. And they talked about a little bit about voodoo economics and how vicious these two were going at each other. But along with the acceptance, I believe, if I remember correctly, George Bush released a statement on abortion where he said he wanted to clarify his stance, and that he is against abortion in all forms, except for the rape, incest, and the life of the mother. And I think that's where that phrase, those three words, were connected permanently. And I think that was released. And again, I'm going back to a 12-year-old memory. I'm 53 years old here, Charles. Do I have this right?
For the most part, yes. I think the bigger the bigger theme to take from your discussion is this. Bush knew very clearly when he came onto the ticket, there were suspicious foes looking at him. Oh, he's not conservative enough like Reagan. But the truth is he was somewhat of a moderate center right. And that's what Reagan needed to grab independents, Democrats, and other moderates. It was a perfect ticket for so many reasons. And over time, they came to trust each other immensely there. A friendship grew into a true friendship. They truly respected one another and really respected each other's times. It was a good partnership. It really was a good partnership for a president and a vice president.
What did George Herbert Walker Bush think of Ronald Reagan before he took office, and how much did that change after he served with him for 8 years?
Well, he knew Reagan was a powerhouse. He knew Reagan had almost upended President Ford in the Democratic primaries in 1976. He knew he was telegenic, handsome, former movie star. He knew he had an uphill battle trying to defeat Ronald Reagan. And the primary, look, in 1980, it got a little testy and contentious to a point where Reagan went to the convention in 1980 with an ABB motto, anybody but Bush. There were, in the beginning, he did not really care too much for Bush and some of his more moderate views. That changed dramatically, first and foremost, with the assassination attempt on Reagan. Bush did not try and take center stage. He landed Marine II at the vice president's residence at the Naval Observatory. He then took a small motorcade over to the White House. He didn't land on the South Lawn. It truly showed the Reagan people Bush's humility and Bush's respect for the office of the presidency. And after that, there were converts and people changed. And not only did Bush and Reagan's relationship become much stronger, but Bush's relationship with key Reagan confidants became much stronger, too.
What did then Vice President Bush, and actually before I ask you, let me remind folks once again, I'm going to shove this book down your throat because it's great. Texas Titans, George H.W. Bush and James A. Baker III, A Friendship Forged in Power. It is a must-read. Get two of them. Get one for yourself and for one of your favorite. Get one for your favorite friend out there that that loves political, loves power stories. Because this is just a great one. It is a must-get for everyone. And again, Charles Danier is here with me, Frank McKay, and he's the author of this great book. And what did Vice President Bush, then Vice President Bush, think of the reaction to Alexander Haig to the shooting assassination? I'm a very serious thing, but of President Reagan, where Alexander Haig basically said, "Look, I'm in charge." Something that Bush didn't say and wouldn't dare say because he had so much respect for the process and the presidency. What did Bush, Baker, and company think of Alexander Haig's attitude at that moment?
Well, Bush dismissed it. That's the best word I can use. He dismissed it. When he showed up at the Situation Room, as he returned to the White House that day, he did not confront Haig. He actually said, "Al, how are you doing?" Shook his hand. And almost like it never happened, he just dismissed it. The way Bush saw it, there's no reason to create an issue. He knew, look, Haig is Haig. He was a general, an extrovert. That's just how Al was. He wasn't trying to really be the man in charge, because if you listen to the whole tape, he says, "I'm in control here, pending return of the vice president," which they cut off.
Right.
So
okay.
Bush understood who Haig was. So they dismissed it.
Yeah, it was an interesting moment in history. And again, we didn't have a 24-hour news cycle there, but they did cut that off. They just had the soundbite they wanted, and they made Haig sound like a power-minded maniac is what they made. And that's what they wanted, and they got it. But I always wanted to ask someone like you that question. And just a moment of time. Let me jump back to the debates. As Vice President Bush was there with Dukakis and he was about to make mincemeat out of him on the tank situation, and I think he said the myth of Fay, you know, the, instead of the fifth of May. You know, Bush had some kind of slip of the tongue, and it was, you know, something we all have, and I've had a million times, and I forget what it was exactly, and I don't know if Dukakis smirked, and Bush, you know, snapped back. He said, wouldn't it be nice to be the Iceman and never make a mistake? And then a little later, I think he said, I was going to ask you for a hitchhike, a ride back on your tank. And they got that point in. And again, it wasn't Bush's style, but for whatever reason, it just worked. And I'm sure those lines either came from Baker, Atwater, or whatever, but he just he obliterated Duke. I think he obliterated him, and certainly in the second debate, and it was just amazing. But what do you remember about those lines, or remember, or either man talking about those lines?
Well, let me talk about the debate overall and the strategy that Baker employed with Bush. Bush was 6'2.5". Dukakis was 5'8". Baker made damn sure that those two men had to come out in the middle and greet each other, because Baker wanted to show almost a half a foot difference between the two. So as Bush leans down to shake Dukakis's hands, Dukakis just looks diminutive compared to Bush. And that's that look Baker wanted. So Baker was so good on using candidates that were taller. Gerald Ford, almost 6'1", Carter, 5'8", Reagan, 6'1", Mondale, 5'11". He was so good at using his candidate's height to his advantage. We like tall people. They look presidential. That's the first thing. Secondly, Baker was the master strategist in getting what he wanted in terms of the style of the campaign, the style of debate. He knew that type of setup with Dukakis, excuse me, would favor Bush. And it did. Bush can get a little, he can hit low if he needs to, hit fairly, but low if he needs to. And he did. And he knew that would be Bush's advantage, not having such a scripted campaign or a scripted debate. So that was Baker's doing, and Bush excelled at it.
Again, Texas Titans is the book. Charles Denyer is the author of that book, and please, please, please get this book. You will not be disappointed. As we speak on the anniversary of the death of George Herbert Walker Bush, president, vice president, CIA head, ambassador, just an amazing career, father of a two-time elected president, and very few men could ever talk about a career in politics and in government, statesman for sure, along with his friendship, James A. Baker, who's absolutely the two men. Again, forged in power. The right in the title of the book. Charles Denyer is here with me, and he's the author of this great book, Frank McKay with Charles. Susan Baker and Barbara Bush. The relationship between those two.
Susan Baker and Barbara Bush. Well, obviously, when your best friend is James Baker for 60 years, you're going to have a natural friendship with Mrs. Baker. They had a very good relationship. They were very close, also. They grew up together, if you will, with their families in Houston at the Houston Country Club. Baker had multiple children. Barbara Bush had multiple children. They had a really good, healthy relationship.
Yeah. You know, it's always interesting to see how the families interacted. What about the Bush children, either Jeb and George, you know, eventually President Bush, but, you know, Governor Bush, did they have relationships with the Baker? I'm sure they obviously knew each other,
sure.
But were they close? Were they close?
I don't know if they were close, but they're cordial, and they had a very respectful relationship for James A. Baker. You have to remember, in the tumultuous Bush versus Gore 37-day debacle in 2000, it was Bush and Cheney that reached out to Baker to go really help secure his 25 electoral votes in Florida and ultimately the presidency. If it wasn't for Baker's sterling efforts in Florida, there would not be a George W. Bush. And that's a fact, Jack.
Yeah. There's no question about it. You mentioned Cheney, and obviously he had a major role in the George W. Bush presidency, and in so many ways he's been vilified. Who was behind pushing Cheney? Was it James Baker? Was it George Herbert Walker Bush? Was it both?
I think Cheney's his own man, and just for transparency, I am the Dick Cheney's personal biographer, and his book comes out in September of 2021.
Ah, that will be a good one.
His authorized biography. I think Dick Cheney is a man of means, a man of power, and who slowly but surely built his Rolodex up within the Beltway, and he was very close to James A. Baker. In fact, Cheney introduced Baker to President Ford and was responsible for getting James A. Baker onto the Ford presidential campaign against Carter in 76.
Well, let me tell you, that's a book that I want to interview you on. Well, if we can get you when that's done, that'll be absolutely fascinating. And by the way, another career that George Herbert Walker Bush and James Baker helped launch. I mean, Cheney and what he went on to do. I mean, certainly without the help of those two men, I'm sure it would have been a much different path.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, you know, cats have nine lives, we say. Cheney had 99.
Wow.
And one of those came when John Tower went down for defeat and Cheney becomes Secretary of Defense. So that was a monumental opening for him politically, but also when he became the youngest chief of staff ever to the President of the United States of America in 1975 to Gerald Ford. So Cheney's a fascinating individual, one of the most powerful men of the last 50 years.
Also a brilliant guy. I mean, let's face it, absolutely brilliant guy. And
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, the two of them, you know, I was going to say him and he and Colin Powell during the Gulf War, I think they put the country at ease and they had a good balancing act between the two of them. It's going to be a fascinating book. We have a couple moments left with Charles Denyer, and he is the author of Texas Titans. It is a must read. And let me ask you about both men, George Herbert Walker Bush and James Baker. Regrets that stand out to you that both men had, things that stuck in their craw. And again, two highly successful men, and you have to look real hard, to find things to second guess them on. But again, they've been involved with victory and they've been involved with defeat. If you can, give me both men's big regrets in life.
I think they're both, well, first of all, they're both legendary. If you think about the political positions that they've held and what they have accomplished, their resumes are just absolutely legendary. And it takes just almost a full minute just to read their resumes. But I think together they both have the same regret. I'm not going to speak personally. Obviously, James A. Baker has not so much regrets, but just I think unfortunate memories of his wife passing, much like George Herbert Walker Bush has unfortunate memories of his daughter passing from leukemia. But they both have one regret, and it's four numbers, 1992, 1992.
Yeah.
If they could relive 1992, things would have been so much different. You know, we lost Atwater. Roger Ailes was gone. John Sununu was gone. Skinner was overwhelmed as chief of staff and unprepared. The campaign was adrift. They did everything wrong on that campaign, and they still were within striking distance. And the worst things could have happened to them. Much like Trump, the worst thing that could ever happen to Trump was COVID, and at the timing that it did. And that's what defeated Trump was COVID, not Biden. But
no doubt.
You know, the entry of Ross Perot, just unfortunate timing. You know, I think if there's ever two candidates that were just so unfortunate, it was George Herbert Walker Bush in 1992 and Donald Trump in 2020. Just really terrible timing for what happened. Circumstances just out of their control.
In closing, and again, this is almost rhetorical, but I would have to believe that 2000, the election in 2000 of George W. Bush, was redemption for both men, and I'm not
no
saying
doubt.
It made up for 92, but how sweet was that victory for the dad, of course, and James Baker as well.
I think it was very sweet for both of them. You have to remember the very man that kicked George Herbert Walker Bush and helped kick George Herbert Walker Bush and Dan Quayle out of office, Al Gore, was the man that was given the boot by George W. Bush. So, yeah, it was a sweet victory. And I think I've been asked many times, who did he really do that for? Why did he go to Florida? And my personal feeling, he did it for his best friend, not so much for George W. Bush. He's like, I'll show the Clintons and the Gores what I can do. I'll get them back.
Listen, Charles, I want to congratulate you not only on this book, but on a great career and on the upcoming Cheney book, which is going to be even more fascinating, if that's possible. This, to me, is...
That one's going to be fascinating. I'm being booked out in advance on that one. I think, you know, I'll leave you with this. He's not only the most powerful vice president ever, he's one of the most consequential and most important figures in the world of the last 50 years, Dick Cheney.
Yeah, listen, no argument here. I'm looking forward to that. Can you give us a website, a social media site where people could follow along with you? And also let us know the best place to get the book.
Sure, charlesdenyer.com.
Easy enough. Denyer is like Denver with a Y. And everyone, charlesdenyer.com. It's a great place to go. And again, Charles, congratulations. Thank you very much. And one last mention of the book. Everyone must get this book. Texas Titans, George H.W. Bush and James A. Baker III, A Friendship Forged in Power is the full title. It is a must read. And here on the anniversary of losing the late president and the late father of a president, he's got no peer in history to me for all that he's seen. And just a very well-respected man, especially as we get further along away from his presidency. You have people on all sides showing great respect for him, not only as a president, but as a man. George Herbert Walker Bush and James A. Baker, two fascinating and historical figures put together so beautifully by Charles Denyer. Charles, thanks again. And to everyone, buy this book. Please buy this book. Frank McKay signing off. We'll see you all next time on Breaking It Down.